AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hello, and welcome to the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore. I was a casting director for film and TV and commercials for over 30 years. I transitioned to a celebrity acting coach after I cast a film, New Jersey Drive, with executive producer Spike Lee and director Nick Gomez. I auditioned every rapper from Biggie Smalls to Tupac. And I realized that rappers and musical artists, they needed help transitioning to acting. My clients consist of musical artists from Busta Rhymes to Eve, Missy Elliott, Angela Yee from The Breakfast Club, and Vanessa Simmons, to name a few. I also coach sports stars and host as well. I feel I have the best of both worlds. As a casting director, I know exactly what they're looking for. And as an acting coach, I can coach you to be remembered in that room. Now, I know actors want to get the job. I get that. But being remembered by a casting director, that is powerful.
And now it's time for meditation of the day. Don't be nervous. Work calmly, joyously, recklessly on whatever is in hand. Henry Miller. I just want to say to you guys that, again, the joy is in the journey and anything that you are pursuing in life, but specifically speaking to actors, the joy is in the journey. You have to learn to extract the goodness. You may not have gotten that role, but continue to embed in your mind that there is a role out there for you. The problem that I see, the challenge that I see in my experience with actors is that it's easy to just go within and tear yourself and rip yourself apart when things don't go your way or you don't get that role. Understand, timing is everything. And I'm so blessed, so grateful to have Jill Morton on the show today, because as much as I wanted him in the beginning of Inside the Black Box and I wanted him to come, today was the day for him to come on. And what a phenomenal day it was. Timing is everything, and it's not always in your time. Learn to appreciate love the time in which you have to work calmly, to keep building the truth in your mind that there is a role out there for you, that you are pursuing a career in which you will attain as a working actor. Today, I will not let useless thoughts occupy my mind about my path.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone to look out for my new show, Inside the Black Box. I'll be co-hosting with the great Joe Morton. We'll be on Crackle Network real soon. I'll keep you posted. Welcome to the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore. You are in for a spectacular treat today. You need to get whatever you have that you document information, pen and paper, recorder, your phone, whatever. This is a monumental podcast. I have been waiting for this podcast. I've been praying. What I do know in this process is that it's all in timing, and timing is always perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to a phenomenal actor. You all know him. So much love when you bring up his name, his work. I want to give him every second of this podcast because he dropped so many jewels. You'll need treasure chests to collect all the info that he's giving you right now. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce you to my friend, my partner, my ride or die, Mr. Joe Morton, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, hello. Glad to be
Welcome.
Here.
I'm so happy you are here, Joe. I knew that the day was going to come, but I was just patient when that day was going to be. So, and Joe, like people are craving right now. I just want you to know, inside the black box, every single moment. And that just brings so much joy. But we're going to talk about that. First, I want to start with you. I want to talk about one of the questions that I ask on the show is that, did you choose acting or did acting choose you? Where did it begin?
It's a little difficult to answer that question only because I entered Hofstra University as a psychology major. They took us around the campus to show us what, you know, what that was going to be like. And then they took us into the theater and they put on a skit about what our first year was like. I don't remember anything about the skit. I don't even think it was very good. But when that skit was over, I couldn't get up out of my seat. I sat in that theater, looked at the work light. I had been writing music on guitar and writing songs. And I thought to myself, I like doing that. Maybe I could be an actor. So eventually I got up out of my seat, walked to the registrar's office and changed all my majors from psychology to drama. So I guess the answer to your question is acting took me.
And what was it? Because I know I have an experience in my life where at 12 years old, my mother took me to on our Broadway in San Francisco for Color Girls Who Consider Suicide when Rainbow Is Enough by Ntozake Shenge. And Oz Scott was the director. Changed my life. I was like, whatever they're doing, I want to be a part of it in some way. And then the rest is history. What was that moment like for you?
The very first play I saw was Pearly Victorious. And at that time, I didn't, that was in high school, and I wasn't thinking about acting at all. I think what changed it for me was the very first acting class I had. I'd never been an actor before, and I remember sitting down next to this young man who showed me his equity card, he showed me his SAG card, he showed me his whatever other union cards he had, and then asked me if I ever had acted before. And I thought to myself, I must be in a class full of professionals. I'm really, really being very stupid right now. And the teacher got up and she gave us whatever kind of improv that she wanted us to do. And when I finished the improv, I loved every second of it. And I thought, oh, well, clearly this is what I'm meant to do.
So in training, right, because you drop so many jewels on the show and just in conversation that I have with you, I want you, from your perspective, to tell these actors, because what I find in classes and a lot of them, my casting director friends, is that like after the class, you're supposed to get, I guess, a contract to an episodic or a leading role in film. And I respect, like, I grew up in New York City in 1983, Negro Ensemble Company, National Black Theater. So I grew up around actors that I saw weren't focused on the fame and making it. They were more focused on, you know, Adolf Caesar, the solidness of their craft. Yeah. So can you speak to these people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when young actors come up to me, they always, you know, say, well, how do I get started? And I always usually say, get some training. Go someplace and get training. If you wanted to be a doctor, you have to go to medical school. If you want to be a carpenter, somebody has to show you how to use those kind of tools. The same thing is true with acting. You have to learn what the tools are, how to use them, and you have to be trained. Otherwise, what may or may not happen is you then begin to just rely on your own personal charisma. And that may get you to a certain point. But then after that, you have no place left to go in that you've given yourself no engine in which to drive forward. All you've given yourself is a place to go round and round in circles doing the same old thing. Whereas what training allows you to do is break down a script, even decide whether or not you want to do that script. You know, what contribution do you think you can give to this story in playing whatever character, let's say your agent or you decide you want to try out for, which is another thing. Actors often feel like the agent says, well, here's the script and here's the character that they want you to read. It makes absolute sense to me for an actor to say, I'll read the character that they're asking me to read. But really, you know what? I like this character over here much better. And I think I could do a better job and actually pursue both those things. I mean, that happened to me. There was a series called Equal Justice. Thomas Carter was the director producer. And when I went in, they had a character that they wanted me to read. And I said to Thomas, I'll read it for you. I said, but this lawyer is somebody I really understand. And eventually, Thomas let me read it because I couldn't find anybody else who that they liked.
Right.
And so when I finally read it, he took, and this was like, what, 1970s? And he was having a hard time because his fear was if he takes this television drama and he puts a black man at the lead, that the audience will perceive it as a black show.
Right.
So that was his problem. Fortunately, he gave me the part.
Right.
We did two seasons. But again, I made the choice in terms of saying to him, yes, I'll read this other character for you, but this is a character I'm really interested in, and then brought that to fore.
So you said something I love. You said contribution, you know, in making decisions as an actor to the work. What is the contribution that this, for you, what was the contribution in A Brother from Another Planet? Because, I mean, you know, for me to, as an audience, because it was early in my casting career, but watching that film, there's certain films in the history of filmmaking, American history of filmmaking, that's etched in stone. And that's a film that's etched in stone. Generationally, I'm sure 99% of the time, that's the first thing people hit you with when they talk to you, right? So that is beyond legendary. What was that film like for you? Because we had never seen anything like that before.
No.
You know?
When I was told about the script, it was described in a way that didn't make any sense to me. And then when I was actually given the script and read it, I thought, oh my goodness, John actually has written a character that is black, but knows nothing about what it means to be in the United States, in Harlem, and be black. So what he's allowed the audience to do is go into a community that they also don't know and learn as he learns. So that was for me the big contribution of this film and of this character, that this guy had to learn as he went along. He had to learn. I mean, the one thing that I do with that character is he never understood the handshake. Every time somebody extended his hand with a handshake, he had no idea what to do with that. It didn't make any sense to him. But on the other side of things, he was also looking for his own people who had also escaped. For those young people who don't know the film, basically the film is about a black slave that runs away from his planet and makes his way to Earth as an escaped slave, and is then pursued by two characters, one played by John Sayles, the other by David Strathairn, in order to recapture him and take him back. Something that's very familiar to us in our history, which is again what John was doing. And so that to me was the hope that I had for this film. It's interesting because at the time, I think one of the major critics said that he wished that John would take his homemade movies and keep them in New Jersey. But that was a sign of the times, right?
Wow, right. That's true.
To have a black man, because at one point in the film, he discovers that these kids who live in his building are shooting dope. And he doesn't understand, one, why you would do that. So he actually shoots up some dope himself to understand what the experience is. And then once he understands the experience, he then sets out and kills the dealer. So again, he becomes someone who, he goes from someone who is learning about the world that he's in to someone who actually becomes active in that world.
And ladies and gentlemen, what's so brilliant about the film is he does not speak at all.
He does not speak at all, right? Not like, a single word.
Because when I imagined, you know, when I first saw the film and I was sort of going through and didn't even know you, but going through the process of like, what was that like? You know, was there someone, you know how like when you are speaking to another actor and it's your point of view, they're shooting, they have the actor standing by the camera, you got something to bite off. How was it though? You know, what was, you know what, does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, what the two things that, what I kept doing is I was is looking for any person, anything that was learning for the first time. So babies were really important to me. Dogs, animals, anything that was learning for the very first time in their environment was important to me. And what John did, he never gave the whole script to anybody else. So mm-hmm. when they came on the set, they only had their scene, and all John would tell them is he's not going to talk to you.
Wow.
He's not going to talk to you.
Wow.
So it really became a kind of improv. You know what I mean? Where the actors would come on, and I mean, a lot of them thought that I had written the script and not John. They thought John was just the director. Well, because it was the dialogue was so perfectly black that they thought, oh, this black man who doesn't speak in this movie must be the one who wrote it. And I kept saying, no, that white man over there, he's the guy who wrote this thing. But that's how we did it. It is he would only give them their scene, and then they would have to respond to what I did or did not do. Mm-hmm. Certainly the fact that I wasn't speaking.
So that's so fierce because it was genuine. It was authentic. It was just...
It was absolutely authentic,
Oh, my God. And before your time, because Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know what I mean? Like, way before.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of improv and not having a structured script. That's right.
I mean, there was a structured script, but they didn't have the entire blueprint, will. Only I did, which is something actually similar that we did in a way with Scandal. None of the other actors knew where we were going, including Kerry Washington.
Because
I remember when I got the job, she was so excited. She said, oh, you're one of my favorite actors. She said, you're the only one of the few actors that I've called my parents to say he's going to be on the show. And then she said, and I hope we have some scenes together. And I said, yeah, I do too. Let's see.
And you know what? It makes so much sense because, I mean, I love Kerry as an actress. She's phenomenal. Because there are scenes, right, where there is sheer terror in her eyes. And it's and when you think about like what you're saying now, you know, every actor has the heebie-jeebies and gets nervous, but she was authentically playing in those moments when you would show up.
We didn't know what their relationship was. So that when we shot the end of season two, we shot it at least five different ways because we didn't know how estranged were they? Did they like each other? Did they not like each other? When was the last time they saw it? We didn't know answers to any of those questions.
Yeah.
And so we had that to establish. And then at the beginning of the very first scene in season three, when we pick up from that point, we're sitting in the car. We don't really know each other. And I've been given a 2.5 page monologue, which to begin with was like, really? This is TV? I'm going to do a monologue? Fantastic.
Right.
And so that opening scene really did establish their relationship. Just recently, I think Shonda had that particular scene on Instagram. And as an explanation of that scene, she said that up until that point, Carrie's character was kind of straddling between being white and being black. She said when Rowan/Eli showed up, that was definitely being black, which is why she put in things like, you know, you have to be twice as good. You know, I'm the hell in high water. All those kinds of things were purposely put into that monologue to let you know the black guys finally showed up in this show.
Yeah. I mean, I was addicted. Like, I had already been watching the show, but when you came on, one of the things that I feel was, I know that I'm entertained when I don't see a boom or I don't have anything going on in my inner voice. I'm actually entertained. So I was entertained, one. But two, emotionally, you and Kerry took me on emotional roller coasters. When you showed up, like, I literally would jump like, oh, my God, why is he here?
What's he going to do now?
Somebody's going to die. Like, you know, and then... Oh, it was just, you know, knowing you, not knowing you how I know you now, but I didn't know you at that time towards the end. It was like, where did you find him? Because I cannot find any like evidence in your DNA of this villain. Where did he come from?
Well, that's an interesting question because that particular year, the end of their season one, I went out to L.A. for pilot season. And I thought to myself, up until that point, I'd played very deliberately, very purposely, good guys, because when I started in this business, it was mostly black guys playing drug dealers and whatever, just bad guys of all kinds. And I said, I kept saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And I played other kind of characters. I went out to L.A. that particular year purposely looking for an intelligent bad guy. So I had heard of Scandal. I hadn't seen it. So I sat down when I got to L.A. and I watched season one on my computer and thought, wow, this show is fantastic. Maybe I'll call my agent and have them give ABC a call. And maybe we can work out some kind of, you know, 6-episode arc or whatever. Before I made that call, my agents called me and said, we just got a call from ABC. They'd like to talk to you about Scandal. I got the call from the producer, and the producer started off the conversation by saying, by the end of season two, the lines will clearly be that you are her father. I said, I'll take the job.
So, Joe, the most played, I guess, add to story on my Instagram is when you talk about manifestation. Can you share that with the audience? You, when we run Inside the Black Box, we're going to go into that
now. Right. I mean, I think, well, just using Inside the Black Box, right? You had something that you had something that you wanted for 18 years. You wanted to find a way to put that on the screen and put that out in front of people. And look what happened. 18 years later, you and Dr. Dave and Spruce and all the rest of you got together. You put together a pilot and invited me onto the show. I went on the show simply because I thought, well, this is a great idea. I love this. This is fantastic. I would love to come on the show and talk about all the kinds of things you guys wanted to talk about. Later on, it turns out that you and I are then the co-hosts of that show. We do 2 seasons of the show. So that's that's manifestation, right? That is having a vision of something, knowing that you have to be patient, that things don't happen overnight. And it comes true for however long it comes true, but there it was. And I think the same thing was true with a good portion, and still to some degree of my career, of saying, these are the kinds of things I'd like to sort of attempt to accomplish as an actor or a director. And those things, for the most part, up to date, I mean, you know, to get a call to say that we want you to play Dick Gregory off Broadway.
Oh, my God.
Was that's amazing. Nice. Was amazing. Yes. And then to be on the telephone with Dick to talk. It's funny because when I first got the gig, I said, I want Dick's phone number so we can talk. And of course, usually in those circumstances, the producers always say, no, you shouldn't talk to him. No, I'm going to talk to him. So you give me his number, I'm going to find his number. We got on the phone together and we talked not about the play. We just talked about each other's father. And for about 2 hours, that's all we talked about. And that's and then during the course of rehearsal, I never heard from Dick again, although we sent him all of the rewrites as we went along. And didn't see him again until opening night. I just knew that he was going to be in the audience. It wasn't a very large theater, so I knew he was going to be in the audience. I didn't know where, but there is a section of the play where I'm talking about Emmett Till, and when I'm sitting on the aisle facing the audience, and I turn, and who am I looking at but Dick Gregory? And it's as if we had this very personal, private. It's as if the rest of the theater kind of disappeared and we just had this private conversation. But again, looking for someone, looking for an iconic character to play, and there it was offered. So, you know, it's that old saying that everybody says in the street, right? What goes around comes around. So what you put out there comes back.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you about, because theater is my number one love, and then TV and film, how important it is, what type of discipline that actors will gain through working in theater. Because even working, I can only imagine, you know, as a one-man show with Dick Gregory, the stamina that you needed every night to do that. You know, you normally have a cast, you have some quote unquote relief, but that was all you. So I guess it's a two-part. One, in terms of the stamina, how did you maintain your stamina doing a one-man show? And two, how important is it for actors to have that discipline under their belt?
Well, I'll do it the other way around. So theater is enormously important, I think, for actors My son at one point wanted to be an actor. And I said, so if you do this, when you come out of school, you cannot go, I will not support you if you decide you're going to do TV and film right away. You have to do theater, because if you can do theater, if you can play a character for 3 months, 6 months out of the year, eight times a week, and keep that character fresh, then you can do anything. You can do anything. The only thing that changes going from theater to TV and film, obviously, is your physical size. Because mm-hmm. in theater, you have to fill the house. TV, the camera, and film, the camera is right there. But all the other portions of that discipline are exactly the same. Again, it gets back to that original question of training. So if you've been trained and you've been in the theater, the rest of it is easy. There's lots of actors that we've seen over the course of the years who are TV and film actors who try to do the stage. And mm-hmm. the first thing that happens is, what did they say? Can't hear them.
Yeah.
Can't hear them because they're not used to projecting their voice. They're used to having a microphone do all that work for them. And then even physically, they're not used to filling the house. We had one young man on our show who had mostly done TV and film. And when he did, I think it was Thoughts of a Colored Man. Was that the name of his show?
Yes. Yeah.
He said that when they started telling him, no, you have to be bigger. He said all the things that he had been trained not to do were suddenly the things that he had to do. And that's, I think, what happens to a lot of actors. Suddenly they realize, oh, my gosh, no, I have to figure out a way how to fill this theater with not only my voice, but with my body as well. So that. And the other question was,
which the stamina of a one-man show.
So, you know what? Maybe I'm just a fool. I didn't even think about what that was going to be like. We rehearsed it vigorously. I also know that I have a tremendous amount of energy. And so we rehearsed it. It was draining because it's very emotional. It's not just the length. It's a 90-minute show, but you go from being a stand-up comedian to someone who loses his child, to someone who does interviews in terms of the movement, to someone who loses, which is why the show was called Turn Me Loose. Medgar Evers was one of Dick Gregory's best friends. Before Dick met Medgar, he was terrified of going down south, and he had never really been down south. And it was Medgar who invited him to come south. And so the last words that Medgar ever said before he died was, "Turn me loose." And that's why we call the show Turn Me Loose. So there was that emotional content to it as well, that the whole show was in a way a kind of homage to Medgar Evers, which is interesting because his wife had not seen the show in New York. I think she felt, and when I met her, she said she felt a little kind of, not abused, but she wasn't quite sure why we were using that phrase, "turn me loose." And she wasn't, I don't think anyone had ever asked her. So yeah. she came to see the show with a great deal of trepidation. When she saw the show, she understood what we were doing. And she and I had a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And then later I met his son, who was a photographer at one of the studios. So
that's beautiful. Well, Joe, the time sped by. We have seriously 3 minutes. I just wanted you to give actors advice from an actor's point of view. And also for those of you who don't know, Joe is also a director and he has been directing. He did episodes. I know people have talked about Our Kind of People and Missing It, but he directed some episodes there. So Joe, can you give them some tips from that perspective?
You know, again, just to kind of go over a lot of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, for young actors, I think number one, keep in mind, training is of the utmost importance. Number two, things don't happen overnight. That careers are just that. They take time to develop. And in that regard, the more you are clear about what it is you want from your career, the clearer that path becomes. There'll be lots of people to tell you, well, you know, you should do this commercial or that, show or this show or that show. If that's not what you want to do, don't do it. That you should do the things that really you are drawn to do. And that may make it more difficult. But you will be clearing a path for yourself. And then don't be afraid to experiment. I mean, I know a lot of actors have tried directing and they don't like it. I, on the other hand, tried directing and just adore directing and just adore being able to, I mean, then the episode becomes like building a character, but it's not just my character. It's all the characters in that particular episode. So I think that, again, yes, perseverance, patience, training, and then for just to be a little bit more specific, for the actors out there, there are questions that we ask ourselves every single day when we go through our day. In my opinion, there are five of those questions that I use every time I approach a script, even as a director. And those questions are, who am I? Where am I going? Who do I expect to meet? And the most, and the two remaining questions are the most important, which are, what do I want? And to what extent am I willing to go to get what I want? So those are the kinds of things, without even thinking about it, that you ask yourself every single day. And when you begin applying that to not only the character in general, but to every single line that character has, it becomes more and more specific in terms of where that, who that person is. Well, you have to do that kind of research, obviously, because it doesn't just mean, you know, my name is so-and-so and here's my job. It means, who am I? Excuse me. Who am I in the depth of my soul?
Right.
Where am I going? That doesn't necessarily mean just physically, where am I going? It also could mean psychologically, where am I going? And then, of course, what do I want? And to what extent am I willing to go to get what I want? Those are clear, because that is finally what the actor's job, even the director's job. What do I want out of this scene? What do I want? What am I trying to achieve? What part of the story am I telling, trying to tell? And the same thing for the actor. What is it this character wants? And to what extent, given what the script seems to outline, what extent is he willing to go to get what he wants? And those are the most important part of those questions.
Joe, my heart is full. I am so grateful for all this information. I know that my actors appreciate love this more than anything. I'm going to bring on two of our actors right now who have questions for you. Well, they have one. Let me see. Deborah and Yolanda, you guys can come on. And Joe, this is Deborah Spears. She went from wearing all black, Joe, in my classes, and I was like, you got a color in your life. But I love her. Deborah Spears, Joe Morton.
Hey, Deborah.
Hey, thank you for being here. It's such a pleasure and taking my question. And a special thanks to you and Tracy for the Inside the Black Box, because honestly, I wouldn't be here on this podcast if it weren't for that show. I literally sent her an email after watching that show. She replied, and I've been taking training from her ever since. And before that, I was in a going in a whole nother direction. So thank you.
Well, you are in good hands, let me tell you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, yes. So my question is, what experience have you had in your career that has been a challenge for you? And what did you do to overcome that challenge?
It's going to sound maybe a little bit strange, but most of my career has been a challenge. As I said, I started off by turning down roles because those, a lot of those roles were pimps and drug dealers and sort of bad guys of all kinds of description at a time when that's pretty much all you saw male actors doing, either on the stage or in film or whatever. So that became a thing. The other part of that, of my particular challenge was because I could sing, I found my way into the theater by doing musicals. I started off by doing Hair. And then that seemed to me to be to have a kind of dead end to it. You're only taken but so seriously as an actor when you're doing musicals. So I stopped doing musicals and then started doing regional theater in order to put together a dramatic resume. And then trying to turn that around and come back and say, all right, so now I want to be looked at in a different light. So I think the challenge, I think, probably is not too dissimilar from most other performers or other actors or other artists in general. You know, if you're Van Gogh, you spend your entire life painting beautiful stuff that nobody recognizes until after you die. So you have to sort of be willing to take that challenge and understand that you have a point of view which needs to be pursued. It's important to you. You have something you're trying to say. And then in doing so, people are going to say, as they do in this business very often, no. And you have to be able either to accept that, reject it, or push them inside and say, well, I'll talk to you another time and move straight ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was great.
You're welcome.
And Elsa Lathan, she's back. So Elsa, I'll let you take it away.
Hello. Welcome, Yolanda. You are up next.
Hello, Mr. Morton. It's so nice to see you on screen. I have seen you many years on the screen and have witnessed your amazing talent. My question for you is, me and Deborah was thinking alike along the same lines. My question is, throughout your acting career and your theater career, what has been your most challenging role and how did you prepare to embody the difficult role?
Probably Brother of Another Planet being the first, because as Tracy said, he didn't speak. So I had to learn how to communicate in a number of different ways without repeating myself. I'll tell you another quick, short little story. The production designer had designed a kind of alphabet and the way that, you know, however they structure their sentences. And she wrote this beautiful card because at one point in the movie, I have to answer somebody's what looked like graffiti on a wall, but actually was from our planet, and I wanted to answer it. So she wrote it, this whole thing, and I said, oh, well, let me take it home so I can actually personalize it, decide what these letters are for myself and blah, blah, blah. I did that, went home, did all this work, decided what these letters were, came back and showed it to her and said, so this means this and this means that and that means the other thing. She said, that's terrific, but you're holding it upside down. So... challenges appear all the time. And I think that what's wonderful about being an artist is that that is the bulk of your career is to challenge yourself. The other major challenge for me was Dick Gregory, to do research on him. My son said to me that after he saw the show that he was surprised that I could make him laugh. Because suddenly I had to be a stand-up comedian. I had never done stand-up before in my life. The other parts of his life, talking about the movement and talking about people had done, those were so human that they were easier to comprehend. But to listen to him, to listen to his timing, to understand where the idea of the cigarette and the drink may have come from, and incorporate those kinds of things into the show as part of his character, that was huge. I mean, when I discovered how to do it, you know, I would go home and go, yeah, finally got that right. Because it was all part of who he was and should not have been taken for granted. So at one point in the play, it's one of his first appearances on TV. He was an athlete. He was a runner. And so I have him in the dressing room and he's warming up to do this bit. And so he's running in place and blah, blah, blah. And in the course of kind of talking his way into doing this stand-up, he picks up a cigarette and he picks up a drink and realizes, oh, that's something I haven't seen before. And without saying a word, he puts together, or I put together, his kind of persona so that as if that was the very first time anyone might have seen Dick Gregory with a cigarette and a drink, which is also a challenge because in the theater these days, you can't light a cigarette anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but it's those kinds of things, I think, that become the challenges in our lives, to find a way to tell the truth. We're finding that out more and more just in living our daily lives, that truth is now a matter of opinion as opposed to simply being a truth.
Wow. That was beautiful. Thank you, Elsa.
Thank you, sir. Absolutely. Thank you.
And I want to thank the actors, Deborah and Yolanda. Thank you so much. You guys, hold tight, sit back. You are blessed. Joe is going to hang out with us a little more. When we come back to the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore, we're going to do class in session.
All right.
Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Welcome back to the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore. And you should be so happy we still have the phenomenal Mr. Joe Morton in the house, and we are getting ready to go into class in session. I'm going to turn it over to Elsa because we have a surprise for Joe.
We do. We do. Thank you, Tracy. And so today on Class in Session, we have a very special monologue by Mr. Sam Bryce. Welcome, Sam. One of our faves.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, for sure.
Thank you.
So when you are ready, Sam, in action.
Oh, you're funny. You're a funny, funny man. Or should I say, boy? You're a boy. You've been coddled and cared for, pampered and hugged. For you, it's always summertime, and the living is easy. Daddy's rich, and your mama's good looking. You're a Grant. You got money in your blood. You are a boy. I'm a man. I've worked for every single thing I've ever received. I've fought, bled, and scraped for every inch of ground that I walk on. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And my daughter went to boarding school with the children of King. I made that happen. And you, Well, you quiet yourself to sleep because Daddy hurt your feelings because Papa banged his secretary and it hurt. It hurt to have so much money. You spoiled, entitled, ungrateful little brat. You have everything handed to you on a silver platter and you squander it. You've had the world laid out for you and you can't appreciate it because you have never had to work for anything. So now you decide that the one thing that you want is my daughter, my child, mine, what I made, what I created. And you can sit here and talk about what a great lay she is, all that you want to get a response from me, but guess what? I'm actually quite literally above your pay grade, which means I know you think that you love Olivia, but the truth is you love the fact that she's a door marked exit. You love the fact that she's your way out because you know if you're with Olivia Pope, you don't have to fulfill your father's dream of being president. If you're with Olivia, you no longer have to be your father's son. The apple never falls too far from the tree. You will always be Senator Grant's disappointing boy, Fitz. And she will always be the formidable Olivia Pope. Don't try to use what I made to make yourself into a man. You're a boy.
All right.
So, Joe, nice. I don't have anything to say. I want to give it all to you.
First of all, that was fantastic. That's not an easy speech to do. The one thing that I enjoyed about it the most is it wasn't overlaid with anger, because it wasn't about anger. It was about something else. The things that you did, I thought, were fantastic. If you were to do that speech again, what I would ask is that, because you understand everything in it. I mean, you clearly understand what that speech is about. I would just make more out of the contrast between boy and man, without pushing it too hard. But he brings all those are contrasts: boy and man, my daughter, this belongs to me, and then finally coming up with his cowardice, the fact that if you're with my daughter, you know that you don't have to be what your father wants you to be. I would just say deepen those moments in the speech. Not that you're in a good place, but I would investigate making those places deeper. Only because that is the heart of the speech, is the contrast between who Rowan is and who this white Southern president is. And the fact that you're even in the white t-shirt, I mean, that was part of what that moment was about, is Rowan was, if you remember, I don't know if you ever saw it, but he's in a t-shirt chained to a chair. Mm-hmm. So I even like the fact that you were looking up at him. All I want to say is Tony, because I don't remember the president's name. But but those are the moments I would look at again. Just go a little bit deeper in terms of the contrast between boy and man. To look a little bit deeper when you talk about my daughter, what I made. These are things that you made. These are things that you've accomplished. And you're saying you haven't accomplished anything. You've been given everything. And then when he says, and the fact that you want to be with my daughter means that's nothing but your cowardice. That's the fact that you don't have to be what your father wants you to be. You can escape all those things by being with this black woman. And I think those were the things I would just ask you to just deepen a little bit more. But other than that, I thought you did a really, really, really fine job.
Oh, Spirit Actor alumni. That's Sam Bryce. Thank you so much, Sam. I agree.
Thank you, Sam. And, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And thank you, Elsa. And then we can just bring on Deborah and Yolanda. You guys can all come on. And Thank you again for your questions. And I cannot, just like I feel like I don't know how I can ever repay you for being my partner on the Spirited Actor, Inside the Black Box, and your support. You guys, we were together 4 years before the show. We even signed that deal. First season, first show, walking out the door, Spirit was like, ask Joe. It's like, Joe, how are you still here? How are you still there, right?
Well, because what we were doing was important, you know, what you had envisioned was important. A lot of the actors that we talked to, you know, I mean, you saw one of them in the Oscars on Sunday night, you know, Jeffrey Wright, there he was.
Yes. That's beautiful. Well, Joe, I want to just give you mad love, mad hug. Thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. This was phenomenal.
Yay. And you guys, stay tight. Hold on, because we are coming back. Season 3, we will be back, and we will let you know when we'll be back. But thank you for your support. And I know that you're going to hold on to this and replay this because you miss Joe. I know you miss Joe. We miss you guys too. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Joe. Everybody put your hands together for
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. And when we come back to the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore, I'm going to give you love. Thank you. Welcome to Kudos Corner. Kudos Corner is where we come together and celebrate a spirited actor, their work, their current work. We just overall want to celebrate you and give you a big, mad love. This week's Kudos Corner puts a spotlight on spirited actor Devin Nikki Thomas. Theatergoers in DC area have been graced by the talent of Devin Nikki Thomas in numerous plays, including Helen Hayes' nominated production of The Bluest Eye and The Trip. And this June, she will lead the cast of Is God Is at Washington, D.C.'s Constellation Theater. Law and Order fans recently saw her share a scene with the show's new DA, played by Tony Goldwyn, in his Law and Order debut episode. Also, a writer, director, stunt person, Devin is in pre-production for her first short film, The Sixth Stage, which she will shoot this spring. Kudos to Devin Nikki Thomas. And now it's time to give love. I want to address jealousy, just to be brutally honest and upfront. Jealousy is something that, you know, I think it's one of those human characteristics that everyone has an experience of, right? However, if you choose to keep that emotion around you or in your energy source, it's not a positive thing. It's very toxic. I want to flip this jealousy thing. I want you, instead of looking at someone else's career and wishing it was yours or thinking that they are not deserving of it, take that energy and focus on the greatness in you. It's not about actors being like anyone else. It's about you embracing the beauty and the uniqueness that you have. No one out there is like you. No one can be you. Therefore, when you are in a callback, or when you're in, you're submitting to the casting director, instead of thinking there's so many people out there that I'm competing against, there's so many people that are better than me. Instead of thinking that way, think about how when that casting director sees your unique submission, how pleasantly surprised that they're going to be that you don't look like everybody else, or you don't do the same performance that everybody else does. You take the time and you work calmly and you focus on the work and you focus on the uniqueness that you can bring your interpretation of that character to the table. And then you let it go, knowing that you are working on your craft, you are training, and there is a role out there for you. Just wait. It's coming. Trust me.
Don't forget to look out for us on our new show, Inside the Black Box. My co-host will be Joe the Legend Morton. It's going to be the Spirited Actor Podcast on steroids. We'll be streaming on the Crackle Network. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you for joining us on the Spirited Actor Podcast with me, Tracy Moore. I look forward to our next Spirited Podcast. Thank you.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.